enough, that's enough. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mike Malloy, and I am here to entertain you. Welcome to tonight's program. Before I begin the entertainment part, this really scary. I was going to let this wait until third hour when I have... What do I have the third hour? What have I got here? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Something from Iowa. Think Iowa and the Soviet Union. But I'll go ahead and do this this little bit here. We had a ballot initiative that I really... I had seen the television commercials here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. I saw the commercials a couple of times. Not overly done, but seemingly very sincere. And they made... the ads for this ballot initiative made a lot of sense. And when we went to vote Tuesday, there it was on the ballot. And Kathy and I both voted yes. What the ballot initiative was, should the people who buy license plates in the state of Georgia, which would be just about everyone who drives or who owns a car, for sure, should anyone who buys a license plate each year pay an extra $10. Now, let me tell you, we have ad valorem taxes here, so you're on your car. So when you get a new car, the first time you buy a license plate, depending on the price of the car, it may cost as much as $350. That's the ad valorem tax on your car, and you have to pay that in addition to the $15 fee for the plate. So the second year you have your car, it comes down. The ad valorem tax comes down, and it keeps going down. I had a pickup truck years ago that in its 10th year, it was a 1987 Ford Ranger. And in 1997, when I would renew the license plate, I was still paying about $89 a year. Okay? That's how it works here in Georgia. The ballot initiative said, should Georgians who buy license plates pay an extra $10 per year to pay for more trauma centers? And it went down. 62% or 52% of Georgians said no. Hell no. I ain't paying no $10. So as a result of that, Georgians will continue to post high death rates from car crashes and work accidents because of the defeat of that ballot measure to improve trauma care. The people who are sponsoring the amendment, which include a lot of emergency workers, first aid people, trauma center nurses and doctors, they viewed the vote as their best shot to bring faster and better care to injured Georgians. And this is, this is the biggest state east of the Mississippi. And we only have, I think the population of Georgia in toto is under 10 million. Is that right? Yeah, it's under 10 million. It's probably more like about 8 million. So other than Atlanta, Augusta, Macon, Albany, we only have one major city here. That's Atlanta. Those other cities I just named are just... Oh, Savannah. That's right. Don't forget Savannah. But anyway, most people in Georgia live more than 50 miles from a trauma center. Well, it's Athens. Okay, that's a college town. I'm talking about big cities, Kathy. Bam. Anyway, most people live more than 50 miles from a hospital designated as a trauma center. Even rural Georgians who are especially vulnerable to injury and death because they can't get to a trauma center, even those people rejected that $10 annual vehicle registration fee. They said, no, I ain't, hell, that's another tax. I ain't paying it. Advocates, people in favor of this $10 little stinky-ass fee, said the defeat makes it unlikely that the state will upgrade trauma services anytime soon. Kevin Boyle, a spokesman for the Georgia Hospital Association, said, quote, "We're headed into an era of uncertainty as far as the trauma system goes. The state budget is in crisis. They don't have any money. The state of Georgia's broke thanks to all the Republicans who have destroyed our country, thanks to the capitalists who destroyed our monetary system." Oh, you know, that's it. So this was asking people to chip in $10, you know, tax yourself $10 so that people will live. No. Georgia has 17 hospitals designated as trauma centers, short of the 30 centers that public health officials say the state needs. Now, Georgia's death rate from traumas, usually the result of car crashes, falls, work accidents, is 20% above the national average. If we in this state were at the national average, we would have 700 fewer trauma deaths a year, according to the Georgia Trauma Care Network Commission. And that's probably a lowball figure. Chad Black, paramedic who lives in Gainesville, Georgia, said he became more and more disappointed Tuesday night as the votes came in. He said, quote, "It was a $10 tax. And people have in their minds that they're tired of being taxed, and it really doesn't matter what it's for. They're against it." Now, Chad Black campaigned for the measure. He blamed a widespread distrust of government. He said, "When you have a campaign that is for something that saves lives, I know that's important to people. But you can't convince people that the right thing is going to be done with the money." Now, who's that thanks to? This state is run by Republicans. We're not talking about federal money. We're not talking about ad valorem. We're not talking about income tax. We're not talking about sales tax. We're talking about a designated $10. And the Republicans have so destroyed, and the teabaggers, so destroyed any faith in government, that people respond that way. So, like I said, there are vast stretches of Georgia that are 50 miles or more from the nearest trauma center, making it unlikely that injured people, especially in car wrecks, from those areas could reach a trauma center within an hour of the injury. And the chances of survival and recovery increase dramatically for many injuries if care is administered within that hour, the golden hour. So I just thought I would mention that. That, you know, it doesn't affect this particular ballot measure. Doesn't affect anybody but folks here in the state of Georgia. But the asininity, this is a red state. This, by God, this Georgia, this red state. Well, guess what? For you folks listening in Georgia, you bohunk hillbillies, let me tell you something. It's probably going your mama who's going to die. Maybe your teenage daughter, when she gets into a car wreck. And if you stupid bastard, would have worked to get this passed, your daughter might live. Your mama might live. And now she's going to die. But of course, here in Georgia, when that happens, these snake handling freaks will just say, "Well, yeah, we're going to miss mama. But you know what? The Lord wanted her more than we needed her here in the family. So the Lord took her." The Lord took her. Oh, my God.
Those are the same folks who are going to die saying, "Hey, hold my beer and watch me do this."
Yeah, same group. Same group. I just thought I'd throw that in. It's just astonishing. I'm not paying no $10. I ain't going to get no car wreck. What if it's some drunk black man out there on a, you know, 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning driving his Cadillac, his Escalade, down the road, and he's trying to shoot himself up with heroin while he's trying to get Obama on the phone, and he has a wreck. You want me to? Oh, the hell with that. The hell with that. Yee-haw. Hey, it's day two after the election. Hey, John Boehner, where's the goddamn jobs?
I'm a little away, it's renegade, the master of the psych hunt. They got three.
for a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Hey, let's do a report from Prairie 2 real quick here. He writes, we used to do that when the President of the United States of America was the most powerful man in the world. Prairie 2 writes, it's official, the most powerful man in the world is no longer the President of the United States. That would be Hu Jintao, leader of the People's Republic of China, at least according to Forbes. And they are the self-appointed experts about these things. The question is whether the premier magazine of the business world, Forbes, is acknowledging the damage done by 40 years of Republicans dominating economic and trade policy, or is it just a cheap shot at Obama as we begin the 2012 campaign? Obama has indicated that he will completely give in to anything and everything that corporate America wants. Maintaining the Bush tax giveaway to the rich is apparently no longer a problem as long as the middle class gets a few crumbs. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is circulating the news that they can now work with Obama with his change of heart over expanding free trade. There are at least three agreements left over from Bush that have been languishing on Obama's desk that will soon become the law of the land. That consumer protection agency that you are looking forward to will be nothing but an empty shell if Republicans have their way with funding and regulation reviews by congressional committees. The president does have broad powers to go ahead with all manner of regulation thanks to precedents put in place during the unitary executive administration of co-presidents Bush and Cheney. Although Obama may not want to ruffle the feathers of his new friends in the business community, the Federal Reserve-driven market bubble took off in earnest today, with the Dow hitting a new post-crash high by gaining 2% to close at 11,434. The price of gold also set an all-time high as U.S. dollar continues to decline, with the prospect of $600 billion in new cash being put into the system. The other shoe to drop is the $3 trillion the Fed has already printed up to stimulate the economy that has been sitting around in corporate money bins. Will this money come into play or not? Hyperinflation, anyone? More likely, they will continue to sit on it, bringing it out only when a killing can be made. Some economists think the Fed is being far too timid if they really want to jumpstart a $15 trillion economy, and they need to set their inflation goal much higher or the money will continue to just sit there. The big Wall Street banks and corporations are getting this money for little or nothing and have no incentive to do anything productive with it. They're just sitting around waiting for deflation to set in, and then they can use all this free money to buy up the remainder of the U.S. economy for themselves. In the meantime, they can continue to churn the markets up and down, taking a piece of the action every day. Wall Street will take a record $148 billion in bonuses this year for doing nothing. Keep in mind that since they do nothing, that money has to come from somewhere. The economy is a closed system. You can't just make money. Somebody has to do something productive to create wealth. Wall Street's preferred method is to steal it from people who have done the work. That's why Reagan's people invented the 401k. All of that $148 billion in bonuses, plus the cost of maintaining the Wall Street Ponzi scheme, comes from people who have worked for generations to build wealth, and it's just disappearing right in front of them. Ironically, the more wealth an American has, the more likely he will vote for the people that are stealing it from him. If Hu Jintao caught any of his people doing the things that Wall Street does, they would be shot and their organs sold. China uses its wealth to build things. We used to do that when the President of the United States was the most powerful man in the world. PrairieNumeral2.com. If you'd like to go to his website, you'll find a whole basket full of his essays. Yeah, we used to be the most powerful. Hey, wasn't the organizing, one of the big organizing principle of the baggers, we're going to cut federal spending. Aren't they all on television? We're going to cross the board, cut, Cheryl. Nobody will name anything. Do you know why? Because it's all a scam. Have you heard what Senator Jim DeMint said? The chief teabagger and teabag organizer. He says he will vote to raise the federal government debt ceiling. He's going to vote for more debt, which means more government spending. But wasn't that supposed to be the organizing principle of the teabaggers? No spending, no more debt. God damn, you poor miserable teabaggers. It's, you know what? It's going to be wake-up call after wake-up call after wake-up call for you ignorant pissheads. You just don't get it. You don't understand. They find all kinds of new ways to jerk you around. Oh, yeah, well, we're going to get a constitutional amendment against letting the queers get married. Oh, we're going to get a constitutional amendment to stop abortion. Oh, we're going to get a constitutional... We're against government spending. We're against debt. What's the first thing that DeMint says he's going to do? Oh, yeah, I'm going to vote to raise the debt ceiling. You poor, miserable teabag freaks.
Radio done right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Well, I just got word 15 minutes ago, the Seattle Times called the Senate race for Patty Murray. A couple of you said this to me. Thanks. Thanks, girls. So for the third time in 6 years, Dino Rossi has had his ass handed to him in statewide races. He ran for governor in 2004 and 2008, lost both. And now he's been defeated by Patty Murray, who is reelected. Gives a little bit of breathing room to in the Senate. So congratulations to Patty Murray. Oh, and by the way, an update on the Beck fan, the Glenn Beck murder fan that had the knife in Spokane and was threatening Patty Murray. The feds have now charged him for threatening Patty Murray. Oh, by the way, Karl Rove had promised to take Patty Murray out along with Feingold and Boxer. He got Feingold, didn't he? Anyway, he's been charged. Oh, here it is. The suspect who waved a meat cleaver as supporters of Senator Patty Murray before a debate last month has been charged in federal court for threatening to murder a United States senator. Oh, good. Goodbye, dumb bastard. Yesterday, a complaint filed by FBI senior agent Frank Harold Spokane field office charged that John Seeler, quote, threatened to assault and murder a United States officer with the intent to, quote, impede, intimidate, and interfere, end quote, with Senator Murray's performance of her duties. He's in custody, Well, that's good to know. That's good to know, huh? Stay in jail, you rotten bastard. Republican senators now are blaming the Tea Party for their failure to capture the Senate. Did you hear that? This is the part I've been waiting for. I still believe that Obama ought to declare himself a one-term president and just start kicking ass so hard that the Republicans, it'll take them, 25, 30, 40 years, if ever, to recover. But we'll leave that aside. I did my rant on that the other night. Republicans now are playing the blame game over their failure to gain control of the Senate as well as the House. In one corner, there's a group of prominent senators and operatives who argue that far-right Republicans like Sarah Palin and Jim DeMint were foolish to push nominees too conservative to win, pointing to the bitter losses of Tea Party-backed candidates in Delaware, Colorado, Nevada, yada, yada, yada. Referring to the debate within the right about whether the party was better off losing the Delaware seat than winning with a moderate Republican like Representative Mike Castle, who lost the Republican primary to, I'm not a witch, you're also not a senator, Christine O'Donnell, Senator Lindsey Graham, The other senator from South Carolina was blunt. He said, quote, if you think what happened in Delaware is a win for the Republican Party, then we don't have a snowball's chance in hell to win the White House, end quote. Former Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott put down his glass of bourbon and put it this way, plainly, we did not nominate our strongest candidates. Aw, poor baby, really? Well, isn't that a shame? Another high-profile senator went even further, placing the blame for the Senate's GOP, Senate GOP's failure squarely at the feet of Lindsey Graham, South Carolina, Jim DeMint. This Republican senator said that the Tea Party was, quote, the big winner, end quote, by helping bring enormous energy behind GOP candidates Tuesday, but he said that, quote, Senator DeMint was a big loser, end quote. Now, they won't name this hapless bastard. The senator said, quote, it's like you're on the five-yard line ready to score and the quarterback calls the play and some member of your team tackles one of your members and keeps you from scoring. Oh, yeah. Jesus, God. Anyway, so I love this. Y'all just keep it up, okay? You right-wingers, you teabaggers, you Glenn Beck murder people, keep it up. We want to see it. David Stockman, remember him? Reagan's budget director, the one who came up with the idea of trickle-down economics and then had his conversion on the road to Damascus. Remember this guy, David Stockman? He was on 60 Minutes last Sunday, and he said... he was describing the demagoguery of this tax cut obsessed political leadership, and Stockman cited a remarkable statistic. This is what he said, quote from 60 Minutes, and you can see this online. Go to 60minutes.com. You can see the whole thing or whatever. He said, quote, in 1985, the top 5% of households in the country, the wealthiest 5%, had a net worth of $8 trillion, which is a lot. Today, after serial bubble after serial bubble, the top 5% have net worth of $40 trillion. The top 5% in America, then, have gained more wealth than the entire human race had created prior to 1980. Do you understand that? And these selfish, greedy son of a bitches want more. They want more. They want the tax cuts unfunded, handed to them by George W. Bush, that took a budget surplus, not that I give a damn, and turned it into a $1.4 trillion deficit. That's what they handed Obama. Bush did that. No way to pay for it. And these greedy pissants want it to continue. Let me say it to you again. Stockman, David Stockman, Reagan's budget director, says, quote, in 1985, the top 5% of households, the wealthiest 5% of Americans, had a net worth of $8 trillion, which is a lot of money. Today, after all their manipulations, the top 5% have a net worth of $40 trillion. So the top 5% have gained more wealth than the whole human race had created prior to 1980. Now, you notice he didn't say the top 5% have earned. No. These rat bastards don't earn anything. Do you think somebody on Wall Street with this constant churning and making up these financial instruments and selling them and to the suckers, to the fools around the globe? Don't forget they're the 6.5 billion people who are just, I want to be a rich person. I want to be a rich person. They haven't created anything except mountains of paper and trillions of dollars of debt. But every time they create more debt, you see they take a little piece for themselves, a big piece for themselves. David Stockman, Ronald Reagan's budget director. Come on, Sarah Palin, you great big old grizzly bear bitch, you. Why don't you quote this? David Stockman thinks there should be a 15% surtax on the wealthiest Americans to help pay down the deficit. Hey, Sarah! Hey, all you teabaggers! How about that? The Hollywood Ronald Reagan's budget director. This is going to be fun. I swear it's going to be more fun than if the Democrats had won. or retained, oh, whatever. But here's what's not going to be fun. Last month, when Breast Cancer Action, a nonprofit advocacy organization, attempted to rent a billboard in Indianapolis, they got the kibosh by every rental company in the city. The message was simple. The billboard simply read this is what it said. Eli Lilly, it's a pharmaceutical company, Eli Lilly is making us sick. Tell them to stop. And it referred to Lilly's manufacturing of recombinant bovine growth hormone, RBGH. You know, you thought this story was over, right? That's the crap they put into milk or into cows to make them produce more milk. Anyway, the reference was to recombinant bovine growth hormone, which has been linked to cancer. Breast Cancer Action tried to put up a sign. Followed the guidelines of all companies contacted to put up the sign, but Indianapolis is home to Eli Lilly's corporate headquarters, and it seems their ad dollars, Breast Cancer Action's ad dollars, aren't good there. According to one local company, Lamar Advertising, you've seen it. You've seen it on the billboards, Lamar Advertising. The billboard was not accepted because Breast Cancer Action cannot prove its claims. Oh, my God. Yeah? What, Gabby?
I'd like to ask Lamar Advertising if the Jesus freaks who put up the Got God billboards all over the
can
South...
Can they prove their...
excuse me. Can you prove the existence of the supernatural deity, the one that says, you know, look up or you're going down?
Well, here's the thing. Recombinant bovine growth hormone has been linked to cancer for over 15 years. Eli Lilly Pharmaceuticals paid $300 million for the rights to manufacture the drug. They got the rights from Monsanto. Studies have found that RBGH is linked to both breast and colon cancer by increasing the levels of carcinogenic insulin-like growth factor in milk. The bovine growth factor is banned in Canadian cows and milk, European cows and milk, Japanese cows and milk, and companies such as Danone, Starbucks, and Walmart have all discontinued the use and sale of RBGH. In September, Breast Cancer Action launched a petition calling on Eli Lilly to stop manufacturing the drug as a public health issue. And, of course, Eli Lilly just gave him the middle finger and said, hey, where do we send this check to the Republicans? We're sick of these goddamn regulations. It interferes with business. It interferes with business. Ha! Prove it causes cancer. Hell, some people still think cigarette smoking causes cancer.
Too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ah, yes, okay. Now, what would you do? Somebody comes up to you at a party or on the street or something, says, I don't like you. I think you are a threat to this republic. I'd do anything to stop you from having any influence on anybody. I'm going to go to all your neighbors. I'm going to actively campaign to get people to ignore you. Would you invite them over to dinner? That's what Obama is doing. He's going to have, you know, like I said last night, Ted and Carol and Allison. How does that go? Ralph and Ted and Bob and Ted and Carol and Alice, only they're in the persona of Boehner and Mitchell and Harry and Nancy. They're all going to come over for dinner. Woo! McConnell was at the Heritage Foundation today. Was it today? I think it was today. And the Heritage Foundation is a nest of vipers. They have no heritage. I mean, they just made. I think that was one. Isn't that one of Grover Norquist's operations? I think it was one of Heritage Foundation. Like, oh, we're part of the Heritage. No, you're not. You're a bunch of goddamn freaks, liars, cowards, draft evaders, and you want to destroy the country. And you're doing a good job of it. You really are. Anyway, McConnell went there to speak. And he said that ousting President Obama was, his words, the only way to advance the Republican agenda. Obama's still going, hey, listen, why don't you guys come over for dinner? We'll play a little bridge. Do you guys play bridge? No, it's a card game. No, you don't? You don't? Okay, what do you want? You want to watch some football? No, you don't want to do that? Okay, would you like it? Poker? You want to play poker? Oh, okay. Parcheesi. I know John Boehner just wants to sit there and drink and put on some more of his man tan or whatever the hell that stuff is. Hey, John, you know you're darker than I am. A little race joke there. Don't worry about it. No offense. McConnell said, if our primary legislative goals are to repeal and replace the health spending bill, you like that, health spending bill, to end the bailouts started by George W. Bush, and did you hear that General Motors, you know, they called it Government Motors. General Motors is about to have a stock, stock sale. No, come on, that's not what you call it. It's like an IPO. They're going to, and the government's going to be paid back and going to make a profit. Obama said, Mitch says, if our primary legislative goals are to repeal and replace the health spending bill, end the bailouts, cut spending, and shrink the size and scope of government. Hey, I'll tell you what, you goofy-looking bastard. Here's the quickest way to shrink the size of government. Resign! Get your ass out! Oh, you don't want to do that? Oh, okay. The only way, he says, to do all these things is to put someone in the White House who won't veto any of these things. He says, we can hope the president will start listening to the electorate after Tuesday's election, but we can't plan on it. Listening to the electorate? What did the electorate say? Huh? The electorate said, what? You tell me. You goofy-looking bastard. You tell me. I'll tell you what, if you want to cut the size of government, I'm all for it. As long as the first thing you cut is you. Go ahead, Mitch. Get your ass out. Get out. In a number of ways. But the way I'm referring to is just get out of the Senate. Go ahead. McConnell last week said that Obama, making Obama one-term president, would be his party's top priority in the new Congress. And a lot of us out here in the hustings who don't know what we're talking about said this was a sign that there's no compromising with Republicans. And Obama's still trying. Jesus God, he looked like a whipped puppy the other day, didn't he? Wednesday morning, oh, yeah, at his press conference. Oh, I'm sorry. McConnell said, quote, the White House has a choice. They can change course or they can double down on a vision of government that the American people have roundly rejected. On health care, that means we can and should propose and vote on straight repeal repeatedly, but we can expect the president to sign it. So we'll also have to work in the House on denying funds for implementation and in the Senate on votes against its most egregious provisions. We will vote to freeze and cut discretionary spending. We will fight to make sure that any spending bill that reaches the Senate floor is amendable so members can vote for the spending cuts Americans are asking for. We will push to bring up and vote for House passed spending rescission bills, end quote. And what did you phony, rotten, vile bastards do during the Bush years, huh? All the unfunded mandates that Bush ordered. Remember No Child Left Behind? Wasn't that cute, No Child Left Behind? Remember the tax cuts? For everybody. Hey, but mostly for the wealthy. Remember all the defense spending? What are you going to cut? Hey, Mitch, what are you going to cut? I have an idea what you should cut. I'll send it to you in an email. I have a very good idea. Mike Malloy's suggestion. I'm going to help you out, pal. I'll tell you. I'll even send the damn knife if you'll cut it. Going to cut spending. Well, I'll tell you what, Mitch, your boy Jim DeMint over there says he's going to back the Republican The Republican resolution, well, it's not a Republican resolution. You guys aren't in power yet. But the resolution to extend the debt ceiling. He's going to vote in favor of it. Of course he is. Of course he is. Jesus, God. This is really funny. Bray, too, writes, the economy, this is something the teabaggers don't understand. The economy is a closed system, something almost no businessman understands, since a business is an open system. The typical teabagger can't understand what a system is. The rich understand this, at least as on a visceral level. The only way to get richer when there's no room to expand is to take it from somebody else, or at least destroy his so your wealth becomes relatively larger. The men who wrote the Constitution warned against bankers and their cycles of inflation and deflation, and most of all, they warned against hereditary wealth. Well, I don't know. Let's sit old Mama Grizzly down and ask her some questions about the Constitution. Huh? You won't do that? Oh, my God. We'll be back after the break. Don't go away, or don't go too far.
Think about that.
Past the hour, I really Obama just freaks me out sometimes. I realize he's up against a lot of white male Southerners, and even though he is not descended from American slaves, I understand there's an institutional or a societal memory, an institutional memory somewhere stuck in. Well, in all of us in this country, there can't not be. But in black folk, especially, there is that realization when you deal with white male Southerners who have a lot of power. Oh, my God, sweet Jesus, be careful. If you're a black man, that has to factor in. So Obama's making no secret of his willingness to strike a deal with these white male Southern cluxers where it concerns the Bush tax cuts, right? This is Steve Bannon from Washington Monthly, I think. Yeah. He said, we start with two competing approaches, extend the Bush tax rates or let them expire on schedule, as Republican officials designed them to. See, 10 years ago, Bush 1 knew that there's no way to pay for these tax cuts. No way. This is part of his the Reagan idea of kill the beast, destroy government. You just don't take my job. there's no way to pay for it. And so they made it a 10-year-long proposal. And the idea was that the wealthy, the really wealthy, the mega wealthy, would even get mega wealthier. And, but they had to do it in 10 years. Well, the 10 years are up. So there's two competing approaches. Extend the tax rates or let them expire on schedule, which I think is January 1st. Democrats offered to compromise. Make permanent the lower rates for families making less than $250,000 a year. And the wealthy, their tax rates will go back to what it was during Bill Clinton's era. Now, the wealthy made more goddamn money during Bill Clinton's era than any time in the history of the average millionaire in the history of the country. But that's not good enough. I think the rate is right now they're paying, 31%, and the top rate would go up to 34 or 35 or something like that. Don't send me an email because I really don't care. It's chump change to these bastards, but it is symbolic.
You don't raise my taxes.
So the Democrats say, okay, we'll make permanent the lower rates for family, middle class, working class. Hell yeah. And the wealthy, you blood-sucking leech bastards can start paying a little bit more into the common till. What do you think? Republicans say, oh, no. Oh, no. And so many working class and middle class people vote for the Republicans. You people are just loony. You're lunatics. All you red state, you free republic weasels, you're crazy. You really are. You're lunatics. And I have to live in a country where you vermin can influence the political system. You turn my stomach. Don't ever walk in front of me if I'm target practicing with my 30 caliber deer rifle. So now we have a new compromise. Make permanent the lower rates for middle and lower classes and extend all of the breaks for the wealthy for another year or two. How's that? Huh? Come on, Brock. You can do better than that. Give it to them for 5 years. And the White House isn't just whispering about this. They're not just talking. Guess what? I'll tell you what you do. Mitch, come here, come here. No, no. Officials of the Obama administration are being quite open about their willingness to make a deal. Now, the Republicans would be thrilled, right? Wrong. Orrin Hatch? Orrin Hatch. The Mormon, another one, was asked yesterday whether he sees any room for compromise with the White House. His answer, no, I don't. Other Republican officials are saying the same thing. It doesn't look well for the future talks between normal people who are still trying to run the government and these psychopaths. Greg Sargent, who's he write for? The Times? The Post? I don't know. He explained the deal White House is offering is already a capitulation. This is what Greg Sargent wrote. There is a way. A one-year or two-year temporary extension could represent a compromise of sorts. If Republicans signal a willingness to at least entertain the idea. Oh, just entertain the idea. Just will you sit down when we have supper tomorrow night? Huh? Will you just, if we bring in dancing girls and keep John Boehner just totally drunk on his ass, will you guys just consider at least entertain the idea of letting the high-end cuts expire after a temporary extension? Please, please, please. But the Republicans aren't even doing that. Their position is that the high-end cuts need to be made permanent. Full stop. That's fine. That's their position. It's understandable they would stick to it, Greg Sargent writes. According to Dictionary.com, the definition of compromise is, quote, a settlement of differences by mutual concessions, end quote. But it's unclear what the Republicans would be conceding here. If they aren't willing to signal genuine openness to a discussion about letting the high-end cuts expire later, a temporary extension is merely kicking the can down the road. It's doing things the Republican way for now and then understanding that we'll have the same conversation again in 1 or 2 years. So, end quote, Greg Sargent. So Barack Obama, he's willing to, and his administration, willing to make a deal with the mighty, mighty Republicans. The mighty, mighty Republicans, like the drunk John Boehner and the blank, blank Mitch McConnell and the rest of these freaks. Yeah, he'll make a deal. All right, boys, I'll tell you what. Because they are a powerful, white, southern male. Well, okay, John Boehner's from Ohio. Southern Ohio! Barack Obama's willing to make a deal. Tell you what we'll do, boys. Will you just keep the tax cuts for the middle and working class? Nope. Okay. Will you just keep the tax cuts for the wealthy for another year or two? Nope. But what you're doing is blowing another $700 billion hole in the budget deficit. Yeah, right. But didn't you guys run on the idea of never doing that again? Oh, I see. It was a joke. Now, the rationale behind the Republican strategy, as Steve Bannon writes, and both of us, you and me, could figure this out. If Obama gets the middle class tax rates now, if he gets to keep them low, Republicans would be forced to fight for an unpopular tax cut plan that primarily benefits millionaires and billionaires later. See? So if Obama lets everything go, makes permanent the tax cuts for the working class, and makes a temporary extension on the tax cuts for the millionaires and billionaires, at some point when that runs out and the working class continues with their tax reduction, then the Republicans have to come in and say, well, now we want tax cuts only for the billionaires. That's an argument that even the Republicans might lose. Well, maybe not, given how psychotic the American electorate seems to be here of late.
My neck is red, my collar blue, I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me, I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side.
The Mike Malloy Show. You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
21 past the hour. All right, several of you folks have written to me about the tax cuts being passed 10 years ago under reconciliation, so I guess I should make the point on the air. I'll take Prairie 2's email. The tax giveaway for the wealthy expires after 10 years is that the bill was passed by the Senate under the reconciliation rule to avoid a Democratic filibuster. 10 years is the limit. Bush passed lots of things this way, a procedure the Republicans equated with Nazi socialism if the Democratic majority used it. They didn't think it mattered since Republicans would be in charge forever and could cut taxes to zero next time. Turns out they were right after all. Okay, thanks everybody who wrote that about reconciliation. You're right, I don't pay attention to that stuff. I really don't. 10 years ago, I had a good-paying job. No, wait. I was working for IE America 10 years ago. Remember that? That was awful. Or unemployed. Okay, where am I? Sorry. Lost. Here is a counter position. There were several, but I decided to pick this one. This is from Terry. Terry wrote... Just heard your podcast rant about how Barack Obama should imitate LBJ and announce that he was going to be a one-term president. I'm sure that you realize that as soon as he made a statement like that, opening up a big can of honesty, he would become a, quote, dead man walking, end quote. Rationally, you must know that they wouldn't let him loose with unrestrained truth about who was doing what to whom and why. Keep in mind that we are dealing with experienced professional presidential-level assassins here. If you were walking in Obama's wingtips, would you be willing to face having yourself, Kathy and Molly, wiped out at any time and face that possibly for the rest of your lives? Also, here's a bit of quote, insider history, end quote. Back in the day, circa the 1960s, my mother was a personal executive secretary to a man named Rhea Howard. Now, Rhea inherited and all of his life ran the only newspaper in Wichita Falls, Texas. As a result, he was a very close friend of Lyndon B. Johnson's. LBJ would often drop by the paper and meet with Rhea. He came to know and called my mom by her first name and gave her flowers, candy, birthday gifts, etc. Often, Mom would sit in on and take notes of meetings that Rhea and LBJ had. The first time LBJ came to see Rhea after he left office, Mom was privy to the real reason he quit. As you may know, LBJ's political career was, beginning in 1941, completely financed by Brown and Root. When George Brown died about 1962, Brown and Root was taken over by Halliburton. As you may also know, Halliburton, Brown and Root was one of, if not the only, or the main contractor for the Vietnam War. They were making fortunes off building bases, roads, airstrips, etc. in Vietnam. When Halliburton bought Brown and Root, LBJ was part of the package. And he didn't like it worth a damn because Halliburton had no intention of stopping the extremely profitable war. So as LBJ told Rhea one afternoon, quote, "The only way I could get out from under those hogs was to just quit sucking on their teeth." He saw that the longer he stayed, the more money Halliburton would siphon off from his great society, and he really wanted to leave a legacy for the poor and disadvantaged. P.S. I might add that Nate Silver said on Keith's show last night that Obama's poll numbers didn't come down very much after this election, and that since he still has the Senate, he could very well still be reelected. Terry. That's an interesting story. Interesting indeed. The only fly I see in that ointment, and I know a lot of folks are going to say, Jesus, Malloy, you're not that naive, are you? It sounds like LBJ would have put his own personal interest or feelings first. And LBJ had he signed the Civil Rights Act in 1964. He did so many things. He made the statement that the Democratic Party had lost the South forever with the signing of those bills. So I don't know. I certainly read Terry's email and think, well, I'll be damned, that's a great story. I'm sure it's probably true. I'm sure LBJ, with Terry's mom sitting there taking notes, I'm sure LBJ did say that to old Rhea, the owner of the newspaper. I just wonder if LBJ, who was known to be a teller of tall tales, wasn't stroking somebody a little bit. But I'll accept it at face value. I will take the story at face value. Thanks a lot, Terry. I appreciate it. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case. I have to say, though, of all the responses I got to that idea of Barack Obama being a one-term president and then kicking ass and taking names, I think I only had, I might have gotten like 30, 35 emails in favor, right, Kathy, and about three or four that said it's a bad idea. Terry's was the one that, one of the ones that said bad idea. All right, we have a break here. We'll be back and chat a bit more, huh? Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen.
More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Bridget writes, hi, Mike. I think Obama should invite Michelle Bachmann to his little soiree. After all, hasn't she hinted she intends to run for leadership position in the House? Isn't she one of the main ones who screamed the loudest about the terrible deficits on behalf of her Tea Party constituency? Tell her he'll be happy to keep the tax cuts for the top tier if she can show him how to do that without adding to the deficit. Then make his offer very public, along with the cost of keeping the tax cuts, and see what the dump the deficit crowd has to say to their little darling. The deficit hawks seem, for the most part, a bit smarter than the rest of the teabaggers. Let's see what happens when their favorites can't pull a rabbit out of the hat. Just a thought, Bridget. The problem with trying to have a rational conversation with people like Michelle Bachmann or Sharon Angle or Jim DeMint or John Boehner, if one has been watching these post-election interviews and pre-election interviews, what was it? Chris Matthews was trying to interview Michelle Bachmann the other night, and he said, "Are you hypnotized?" Because they all do the same thing. They refuse to show any respect to media. Now, on the one hand, you hear me bitch about mainstream media all the time. That's probably a good thing. But these people are thugs, liars, cheats, sneaks, Nazis, bastards, bitches, and the worst scum. Did I leave anything out? I don't think so. So when they criticize the media or someone like Chris Matthews, it's different from my criticizing Chris Matthews. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? I think you do. And don't say it's a distinction or a difference without, or a distinction without a difference. No, it isn't. So to invite Michelle Bachmann to the White House, she would stand there and say, well, you know, the American people have spoken, and they say that what we want is to reduce, and we're going to reduce deficit, and we're going to spending all the cuts across the board. What are you going to cut? We're going to spend the cutting spending across the board. You know, there's something else here that I got this right-wing nut site. It's Hotline on Call. I saw this article, or somebody sent it to me, about the Republicans picked up 680 state legislative seats in the various states. I don't know if that's true or not. That would equal about 15 per state average. But the right-wing nut wrote, while the Republican gains in the House and Senate are grabbing the most headlines, the most significant results on Tuesday's came in state legislatures, where Republicans wiped the floor with Democrats. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, Republicans picked up 680 seats in state legislatures, the most in the modern era. To put that number in perspective, in the 1994 GOP wave, Republicans picked up 472 seats. The previous record was in the post-Watergate election of 1974, when Democrats picked up 628 seats. The Republicans gained majorities in at least 14 state House chambers. They now have unified control, meaning both chambers, of 26 state legislatures. They sure as hell do here in Georgia. That control is a particularly bad sign for Democrats as they go into the redistricting process. Well, that's the point. Only the writer of this is gleeful about the fact that, you know, redistricting is a polite word for gerrymandering, which is even a less polite word, but nonetheless it's code for screw the opposition party. Let's set up a district that starts over here on the state line and weaves around this mountain and then drops down here of the river and then cuts through downtown whatever and then goes up here. And that way, that'll all be Republicans, and that way we'll be sure to get that representation in the U.S. House. This is a very serious thing. One of the first things that this punk John Kasich is going to do, and he is a punk, the new governor of Ohio, he is a slime ball. One of the first things he's going to do to these poor unemployed people in Ohio is lead his redistricting charge. See, let me tell you something. The person behind a lot of this, the person garnering all this money to these teabaggers, all these ads, the person who engineered the Citizens United case, why do you think that the Supreme Court, those five conservative justices, those five neo-Nazi justices, why did they, the case before them, Citizens United, they were not asking the appellant or the person bringing the case before the Supreme Court. They were not asking the Supreme Court to rule that corporations had the same rights, if not greater, than people in providing money, unrestrained money, to PACs or to outside organizations, I should say. You know, you still can't give it directly to the candidate. But you can give it to outside organizations that can work on behalf of the candidate or something like that. It doesn't matter to me what the particulars are. It's still devastating. But it was Rove that engineered that. It was Rove, I've heard, that made a couple of phone calls to make sure that the ruling would go beyond what all Citizens United wanted, was the Supreme Court to rule that their 30-minute infomercial against Hillary Clinton had to play. Now, because it was because it wasn't a political ad, or they claimed it was, I don't know. But when the Supreme Court ruled it had to run, the Supreme Court went one step further and said, by the way, that's the activist judges that these teabag bastards and the right-wingers are always saying that the Democrats do. Because, yeah, the Democrats did things like declare that equal protection under the law applied to people of all races, not just whites.
That's activism.
All of this money that flooded the system this time, it's coming through the operatives that work for Karl Rove. Remember what Karl Rove talked about back during the Bush-Cheney crime family was establishing and maintaining a permanent Republican majority. And he couldn't do it while Bush was in office, because Bush and Cheney were such criminals. They were such highwaymen, such liars, cheats. You know, Bush came out today and admitted in his book, not today, but in his book, he admitted that he authorized torture. He said, yeah, oh, yeah, Sheikh Khalid Muhammad or... That's a whole different topic. Maybe I can get to that tomorrow. But the beast behind all this is this pudgy, pasty Pillsbury doughboy, Karl Rove. This rat bastard is the gift that just keeps on giving. Not only does he make a couple of phone calls and get the Supreme Court to rule the way they ruled, which the petitioner was not asking for. Citizens United was not asking for a sweeping ruling that the five Nazi justices decided to come up with. That was the result of Karl Rove. Once that happened, because Karl Rove let the word filter to the people who needed to know, that he was just waiting for the key, the magic key to unlock that door, that flood of money. And then, by God, the permanent Republican majority will be there. So, I just hope that when Glenn Beck commits suicide, that Karl Rove happens to be standing behind him. You know what I mean? Rove why would somebody like Beck or Rove or Limbaugh, all of whom are multi-millionaires, why would they want to destroy everything for the rest of us? And the answer is because they can. Because it's fun. It's sport. These power-crazy people, neo-fascists of a sort that would have embarrassed Hermann Göring, they do it for sport. They do it because they can. I mean, they have almost everything. They already have everything. Okay, not everything. 99% of everything. And that's what pisses them off. How come I've only got 99%? I want 100%. To think that the richest 5% in this country has a net worth of $40 trillion, which is more wealth than the entire human race had put together prior to 1980. The entire human race. That's got to include the Catholic Church, the Greeks, the Romans, the Egyptians, the Chinese, all those ancient cultures with their temples of gold. 5%, the top 5% of Americans, $40 trillion in wealth. And you people want $41 trillion, don't you? Or $42 if it's there. Or $43 if you can squeeze a little bit more out of the working class. You bastards. Before the hour, email here from Alice in San Francisco. Mike, you remarked on the largely different outcome of the elections in California. Indeed, it is quite a relief that California has lost a Republican and elected a Democratic governor. Despite saturation of the airwaves with Megabucks Whitman's propaganda, there were seats which actually swung to the Democratic candidates, though there are still a few important offices yet to be decided. And you wondered why Alan Grayson in Florida lost so definitively. Perhaps the answer lies in your own uncomfortable experience at the ballot box. She's referring to what I said the other night about voting on a Diebold machine. Alice goes on. Here in California, thanks to our meticulous Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, Diebold voting machines have been rejected. She has sued one of the electronic voting machine companies and won $3.5 million in damages against them. We still use a felt marker on thick ballot sheets to indicate which candidate we want and to respond to ballot initiatives. There is a paper trail. Our Secretary of State has been criticized because California, quote, lags behind, end quote, other states in the computerization of our voting system. Perhaps this has some connection with the more citizen-friendly, in other words, sane, outcome to our elections here. Alice in San Francisco. Yeah, if I were king of the United States for a day, I would find that pastor in Florida who wanted to burn the Korans and tell him, all right, here's what you'll do, or you're going to wind up living in Saudi Arabia. You gather up all the Diebold and ISS and all the rest of these voting machines, put them in a great big pile, douse them in gasoline, set the sons of bitches on fire. I mean, it's astonishing. I do not advocate don't vote. At all. I have been advocating don't vote for the people who continue to fool you, whether they're Democrat or Republican or both. But when I walk into a voting place, like I did the other day, and I've got my six-year-old with me, and I see the Diebold touchscreen machines, and Kathy and I step up, and Molly watches, and Kathy and I look at each other like, This is beyond farcical. This is insane for us to stand here and touch this goddamn screen seeing the name Diebold on it. I mean, when I drive through a our bank, we have a credit union that we, all of our personal business, we have to use a bank for the business account, which I hate. When I drive through the bank to make a deposit in our business account, and at the very bottom I see the name Diebold on that ATM machine, I just want to stuff a hand grenade right down in that little slot there, you know, and drive away. We were the first state to use those machines. I think it was the 2000 election. Yeah, it was the one that was stolen by the Bush crime family. That was the first year, 10 years ago. At the time, Georgia Secretary of State, was that Karen Handel? Or I don't know. She may have been the superintendent of schools. I have no idea. But word came out that, oh, we've got this voting. This is right at the point where Georgia had a Democratic controlled House and Senate and governor's office. And our governor at the time, 2 years later, our governor at the time, Sonny Perdue, what was his name? The guy that just ran again, Roy Barnes, Democratic governor. He was 14 points or 11 points ahead the night before the election. The day of the election, he lost by 7 points. And that was the big test. And what we got was Sonny Perdue, just a complete incompetent bastard that has been here for 8 years and now is being succeeded by one of the most corrupt and investigated members of the U.S. House, Deal. What's his first name? Nathan Deal. The reason he quit the U.S. House and came back to Georgia to run for governor is because they were about to throw his ass out. He is so corrupt. But I remember that election, and I knew Roy Barnes, still do, and had participated in a couple events with him, and everybody was pretty convinced that he was going to be reelected. 11-point lead, and he lost the next day by 6 or 7 points. Now, I may have those numbers reversed, but it was an enormous disparity in how the election turned out and how the polling went and the exit polling. And it was then that most of us here in Georgia who could still think realized that from that point forward, there would never be ever another legitimate, honest election in Georgia. Now, how many states use Diebold or ISS or these touchscreen? And Diebold, and I think the other company too, I think a couple of these companies, unless it's changed, are owned by real right-wing, some of them fundamentalist Christian freaks who are determined to do Jesus' work by cheating the elections, cheating on the elections across the country. They use Diebold in Ohio, don't they? So I think Alice is right that the reason Nutmeg got defeated is because the people who wanted her not to be governor prevailed, the ones who voted that way. Had you all had Diebold machines out there, I'll bet you dollars to donut holes that you would be talking about Governor-elect Whitman tonight. All right, stick around. When we come back, the Soviet Union and Iowa. Trust me, there's a connection. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. You know, other things happened in the election on Tuesday that are disturbing on the one hand, to me, on a very fundamental level, for different reasons. Let me quote something to you. You may already know this. When I was in high school, our American history and government teacher tried to explain to us the difference between the systems of law in the United States on the one hand and the Soviet Union on the other. And what our high school junior class civics teacher, American history and government, what he was trying to share with us was the idea that if you do not have the rule of law in a society, then the society is prone to anarchy or destruction at any time. Any time. There have been an awful lot of literary efforts made to make the same point. William Golding, George Orwell, the list is endless. There must be rule of law. Now, usually the way we do that in this society, and this is what my long ago high school teacher was trying to point out to us, you establish first a constitution of how your society is to be structured, how it is to be structured from strictly from the standpoint of the rule of law, not politically, not socially, not from a class basis, but strictly from the standpoint of how you are going to govern yourselves or how you are going to write your laws. Once that is established and placed into your constitution, in theory, it can't be removed. This is who you are. This is who I am. I'm 5'10". I have gray hair, light-colored skin, blue eyes. It can't be changed, you know, unless I want to pour a bottle of dye on my hair, unless I want to go get some colored contact lenses. This is who I am. This is what the structure, the legal structure of our society is. So once you have the Constitution, then you can, of course, you can amend the Constitution, and you can put into place your bodies of law, like the U.S. Congress or state legislatures or what have you, and they can write laws different from what's in the Constitution. And this is where an independent judiciary comes in. It is the function of the judiciary to take a look at the laws that were written and say, that's unconstitutional. If you are going to apply that law, the judiciary will say, you are violating your own constitution. Therefore, by definition, it is unconstitutional. Now, in an ordered society, in a civilized society, when something is declared unconstitutional, it is tossed out. Because it's in violation of the very rules that were set up to govern the place where you live, the society within which you live. An independent judiciary was always noted by the framers to be absolutely critical to the survival of this society or any society. I mean, you know that, I know that. We're not scholars. I'm not a scholar. Are you? Okay, we're not experts on constitutional law or independent judiciary, but we just know this. If we grew up here and if we had a junior class civics instructor back in high school, then we know this stuff. Now, obviously, the teabaggers have no clue about this stuff. I don't know who in the hell educated them, educated quotes around it. But maybe their church, maybe their sick parents, I don't know. In the old Soviet Union, the law was developed After the revolution in 1917, obviously, it couldn't have been developed before. There was no Soviet Union before the October Revolution. So, the Soviet legal system regarded law as an arm of politics. Eh? And courts as agencies of the government. Now, right away, you see the enormous danger there, right? An arm of politics and agencies of the government. That's how the Soviet legal system regarded law, which is exactly what the teabaggers and the so-called conservatives in 2010 America consider the law to be. It's the same thing. The Soviet system was designed to protect the state from an individual rather than to protect an individual from the state. Now, the teabaggers scream about, oh, liberty, justice, yeah. Another example of inverted, corrupted language. The teabaggers want the state of their existence to be protected from the individual, even if the individual's rights are being destroyed. Constitutional rights, the right to privacy, the right to free association. As long as the state of well-being of the teabaggers is challenged by someone else's comfort zone, then the teabaggers want to punish those people. Now, in the Soviet Union, in order to enforce the protection of the state of being comfortable to the rulers, in order to enforce it, the Soviets developed their secret police agencies, and extrajudiciary powers were given to the secret police agencies. Now, we had a candidate who was open about this in Alaska, Joe Miller, who openly suggested that the United States use the system of extrajudicial police state power. And he referenced the East German police, the Stasi, to enforce the borders of the United States. Now, Joe Miller is a dumb son of a bitch who has no more right to be running for office because of his stupidity than the family dog. Apparently, Joe Miller didn't realize that people were trying to get out of East Germany when they were shot down by the Soviet-style secret police. But it doesn't matter. His reference was clear. Now, I say all this in preamble to what happened in Iowa Tuesday. Do you remember how shocked everybody was a few months ago when Iowa's Supreme Court issued a unanimous decision that legalized same-sex marriage in that state? Remember, everybody went, Iowa? Isn't that going to upset the cows in the cornfields? Iowa! Well, Iowa has a reputation of pushing ahead of public opinion on matters of minority rights that are protected by the Constitution. They ruled against slavery. They ruled against school segregation. They ruled against discrimination decades before the national move shifted toward racial equality. The Iowa Supreme Court, according to the New York Times, from its first decision in 1839, the Iowa Supreme Court demonstrated a willingness to interpret the Constitution as written. And in this case, the state constitution of Iowa. If there is protection, equal protection under the law, then the Iowa Supreme Court said, well, there's equal protection under the law. That means everybody has a right to legal protection. Right? Very simple, right? Well, guess what the voters in Iowa did on Tuesday?
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Okay, so the rule of law is necessary if you're going to have a society that's going to function. Jesus, I'm starting to sound like Tom Hartman today. and the law, the foundation of the law is established in your Constitution. That's all. And if people get to the point where they think the Constitution of whatever society is so repressive, so sick, so degenerate, so antithetical to human development, human rights, human thought, then they rise up and overthrow the government and establish new constitutions. Very simple. You cannot live your life under a constitution that is written as the rule of law was written in the Soviet Union. You can't live your life under a system of law that says the state has to be protected from you. And the crimes you commit are crimes against the state. We have very few crimes against the state here. Advocating armed insurrection. And I don't know. I'm not sure that's a crime against the state rather than a crime against society. I don't know. Again, I'm not that bright. If Tom Hartman were sitting here, he could help me out. But getting back to what the voters in Iowa did, what the New York Times calls an unprecedented vote. Yeah, well, I guess so. Voters in Iowa removed three Iowa Supreme Court justices who were part of the unanimous decision that legalized same-sex marriage. The removal of those judges has got the right-wingers who orchestrated the defeat of these three judges, has got those right-wingers in a state of orgasmic joy. In other words, the people who are celebrating the fact that removal of these judges by popular vote, the people who are celebrating that removal are saying, clearly and distinctly, equal protection under the law in Iowa is not applicable. We don't believe in that. And any judge who interprets our state constitution as being a constitution that guarantees equal protection under the law will be removed from office. Oh, my God. The Times says the outcome of the election was heralded both as a statewide repudiation of same-sex marriage and as a national demonstration that conservatives, who have long complained about legislators in robes, are able to effectively target and remove judges who issue, get this, unpopular decisions. There have been many unpopular decisions issued by judges in the history of this country, some of which were clearly not in keeping with the Constitution. But to rule in favor of the federal government's 14th Amendment, and one assumes that, I don't know, the state of Iowa, maybe the state of Iowa does not guarantee equal protection under the law. Were that the case, though, I think that the people of Iowa or someone somewhere would have pointed that out a long time ago. Iowa has been a progressive state, a leading state, where it concerns equal protection under the law. Ordering desegregation, ordering voting rights, ordering gender rights, and ordering the rights of people who have to be gay, equivalent to people who have not to be gay. Same-sex marriage. Now, that decision, one has to assume that decision was made on the basis of the law. Were there, I don't know, how many judges are there? How many Supreme Court judges are there in Iowa? Nine? Are there nine? I don't know. It was a unanimous decision. Okay, what about the other six judges? Well, they weren't up for reaffirm. I forget what they call. It's not. I'll have it here in a second. In some states, it's a affirmation that the judges can continue for another 8 years. It's not a political contest like Democrat or Republican. Nine judges Or, however many are on the Iowa Supreme Court, voted unanimously several months ago to rule in favor of the rule of law. That anyone, no matter who they were, as long as they reached a legal age, I mean, that's common sense, isn't it? That's also probably in the Constitution of the state of Iowa. But equally so in the Constitution was the right of people, equal protection under the law. So if you happen to be gay and you want to get married, yawn. Next! I mean, why is it? Well, you know why it's an issue. Because of these Jesus-killing, freaky, Christian, right-wing, insane people who will make sure that their agenda is followed. Whether you want it or not. But Mike, the majority of the people who voted on the issue voted to get rid of the queers. Yeah, we're going to address that when we come back. Stay with us.
It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, we're talking about the so-called rule of law, what's left of it in this dying society, thanks to the Christian crazy people, for the most part. So anyway, the state of Iowa, the voters in the state of Iowa defeated three judges who were up for, it's called standing for periodic retention. A system known as merit selection. Judges do not run against each other in Democrat, Republican. They're appointed by the governor from a slate of candidates nominated by a committee of lawyers. And in these three that were replaced by the voters. Replacement four, I'm sorry, for the three ousted justices will be appointed by the governor from a slate of candidates nominated by the committee of lawyers. And then they have to stand for periodic retention votes. We have the same thing here in Georgia. Leaders of the recall campaign who said, well, the judges unanimously voted to extend to marriage rights to people happen to be gay, the right to make a contract to people happen to be gay, which is all marriage is. Marriage has nothing. Damn it, it has nothing to do with any stupid religion. It is a contract authorized by the state in which it occurs. And therefore should have no, absolutely no opinion as to who's getting married, as long as a base requirement of age is met. Why age? Because the state has an implied interest in making sure that 10-year-olds don't get married. But the state has no interest, unless you're a Christian crazy person, in deciding the gender of two people who want to get married. Leaders of the recall campaign in Iowa say the results shall be a warning to judges everywhere. Bob Vanderplatz, an unsuccessful Republican candidate for governor who led the campaign against marriage between people who happen to be gay, said, I think it will send a message across the country that the power resides with the people. It's we the people, not we the courts. You sick son of a bitch. That's called mob rule. Here's another Republican who does not understand that he lives in a democratic republic. He does not live in a democracy. A democracy would never have allowed, one presumes, black children to go to school with white children. Black folk to have the right to vote just like white folk. Gay folk the right to marriage just like non-gay folk. Because democracy is mob rule. That's why we have a democratic republic. The rights of the majority prevail with protections for the minority. Gosh, this is really hard stuff. But these brain-dead right-wingers, I don't care if they're in Iowa or Georgia or across the country, whether it's Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh, these dirty, stupid morons who impose their Soviet style of justice are disgusting. All of them. Irwin Chemerinsky, dean of the University of California, Irvine School of Law, said, quote, "What is so disturbing about this is that it really might cause judges in the future to be less willing to protect minorities out of fear that they might be voted out of office. Something like this really does chill other judges." Oh, my God. The Soviet style. The Soviet secret police agencies in this country, they are Christian right organizations. Now, how did the people of Iowa come to the decision? I don't know what the commercials said that were run by the outside groups. That's where the money came from. That's where the money came from. Outside groups. This year, more was spent on campaigns in these elections than was spent in the entire previous decade. The most sustained effort to oust these judges, any judges who vote for the protection of minority rights, the most sustained effort happened to be in Iowa, where out-of-state organizations opposed to gay marriage, including the National Organization for Marriage and the American Family Association, neo-fascist Christian Let's Kill Jesus groups, poured money into the removal campaign. The judges faced no opponents in retention elections, simply had to win more yes votes than no votes to go on to another 8-year term in Iowa. In these cases, the three ousted judges in Iowa did not raise campaign money. Why should they? That corrupts the system. And they only made public appearances defending themselves toward the end of the election. Each of the three justices, Marcia Ternus, the Chief Justice, Michael Streit and David Baker, they received about 45% of the vote, making this the first time members of the state's high court had been rejected by voters. Now, the removal of these justices will have no effect on the same-sex marriage law. That will remain the law. So this move by these filthy, right-wing, neo-fascist, so-called Christians was simply a blood revenge act. You guarantee rights of another minority in this state, we will cut your goddamn throat. We will make sure you are out of office. You uphold our Constitution, you're dead meat. Woo! New York Times asked them for an interview, and the judges declined the request, but released a statement that criticized what they called, quote, "an unprecedented attack by out-of-state special interest groups," end quote. The statement defended the system for selecting judges, but offered what a veiled warning about populist impulses to remake the judiciary. The statement said, quote, "ultimately, the preservation of our state's fair and impartial courts will require more than the integrity and fortitude of individual judges. It will require the steadfast support of the people," end quote. Now, the legal community in Iowa, according to the Times, saw this as a bitter disappointment. They rallied behind the justices, too little, too late. The executive director of One Iowa, an organization supporting gay rights, said, quote, "a lot of time we start in the courts because they're there to protect the minority against the tyranny of the majority. because they're there to make tough decisions without regard to popular opinion, end quote. Well, to the people, the citizens of Iowa, your courts, your decisions, your judge's interpretation of your own constitution means nothing, absolutely nothing. If the American Family Association or the National Organization for Marriage, Christian right-wing organizations that want to see gays murdered, I don't give a damn what they say about, oh, no, we just want them to do what God says. You lying bastards. They're just like the Nazis. Exactly. Just like the Nazis. Just like the Torquemada. You will convert or you will die. The Nazis didn't even give them a chance. And these Christian insane people who flooded Iowa, I can only imagine what the commercials were like. Huh? Dark, rumbly music, black screen, voiceover says, do you want your child being turned into a homosexual supporter? Worse, do you want him turned into a homosexual? These judges in the state of Iowa decided that your child should be gay. What do you say, Mom and Dad? Vote no on the retention. And then name the judges. You know how that works. You know, that's exactly what it was like. Do you want homosexuals teaching your children? Do you want them to be forced into your churches because of the law? Then vote no. For the retention of these un-American, anti-marriage, anti-God judges. Right? Right? You know how it works. A law professor in California said, quote, obviously, this has an impact on the independence of judges and how they think of their role. I think that's demonstrable. But more than that, this law professor said, I think the damage is not on judges, but that courts will come to be seen and judges will come to be seen as simply legislators with robes, end quote. Who does that remind you of, that phrase, huh? Glenn Beck. Teabaggers. The neo-fascists in this country. The right-wingers. The crazy sons of bitches who are determined to destroy the rule of law. And this is how it begins. In Germany, it was the Jews. In this country, it's gays and Muslims. Get the Jews. Get the Jews. They're the ones screwing up our great fatherland. Get the gays. Get the liberals. Get them. Before the hour, now I don't have the results of what happened, but last night Green Bay, Wisconsin City Council met to consider an anti-gay resolution. The City Council, the recommendation to consider an anti-gay resolution came from the Protection and Welfare Committee. The Protection and Welfare Committee, which I have no earthly idea what that is. But the Protection and Welfare Committee asked the Green Bay, Wisconsin City Council to officially sign on to Wisconsin Family Action's legal challenge to the statewide domestic partner registry. Just domestic partners. Not marriage. According to press release from Fair Wisconsin, a gay rights organization, the Domestic Partner Registry was enacted in 2009, and it provides 43 critical protections, not special rights, protections, to caring and committed same-sex couples, including hospital visitation, time off from work to care for a sick or injured partner under Wisconsin's Family Medical Leave Act. No, that's not for queers. And inheritance rights. Now, the fact that the City Council of Green Bay is meeting or met last night, and again, I don't know the outcome of the meeting yet, to consider this challenge to the statewide domestic partner registry. It comes on the heels of a request by Green Bay Department of Public Works employee Dave Foles. This guy works for the city, Department of Public Works, Dave Foles. He wanted domestic partner health care coverage a couple of months ago in August. The city council refused to consider Mr. Foles' request and is now going even further by considering an attempt to strip the limited and critical protections provided to Foles, his partner, the 75 couples registered in Brown County, Green Bay, and the more than 1,500 same-sex couples across Wisconsin through the state registry. You see, we'll get them to register, and then we can find them. We can find them. We'll make the Jews register and make them wear this yellow Star of David. Then we can find them. We'll make the union organizers register, and then we can find them. You can find out, I guess, results if you live in Wisconsin. You probably already know. For those of us who don't live in Wisconsin, we can go to fairwisconsin.com, which I did earlier this evening and didn't see anything about how this turned out. But Green Bay City Council will consider the recommendation from one of its committees to sign on to a right-wing, Christ-killing Christian organization called Wisconsin Family Action, their legal challenge to the Domestic Partner Registry. God hates fags! How dare you give them the same protection? It never stops, does it? Huh? Now, why does Uncle Mikey make such a lot of noise about gay rights? I guess it goes back to the German theologian Niemöller's infamous or famous or ill-timed statement about they came for this group and I didn't say anything because I wasn't part of that group. And then they came for this group and I still didn't say anything because I wasn't part of that group. And then they came for another group and I said nothing. And then they came for me and there was no one left to speak out. Now, what do you right-wing Christian morons think? That was one of your tribe that said that. What was he, Lutheran? What does that mean to you? Well, when you see that quote, what is it? Do you immediately get some sepia-colored photo in your mind of the SS knocking down some old Jewish man in the streets of Berlin and stomping on his head? Oh, no, wait a minute. That was Ron Paul's group. Excuse me. What do you get when you see that? Niemöller's statement. Who do you think they're talking about? You think they're talking about what? You Christians? That somebody's going to come and get you? That's what you want the rest of America to think, don't you? That you Christians are under such horrific threat.
Oh, they're going to kill Jesus again and again. If gay folk have the right to marry.
So I'll ask what I've asked a lot of times. What the hell is wrong with you people? Huh? Seriously. What is wrong with you? you people who see such a threat. To what? To whom? Because people who happen to be gay want to get married. And want to have the same rights as you, you selfish freak.
No, they can't do it. No. I can get married. You can't get married.
Why not?
Because you're queer.
So? So as we lament the takeover of this country by the fascist organizations at 1 Tuesday night, keep in mind there are all sorts of descending layers of filth, political filth going on in this country, from city councils to statewide referenda. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.